and welcome to Scran. I'm your host, Rosalind Erskine, and my guests on this bonus episode are Martin Compston and Phil McHugh, stars of Martin Compston's Norwegian Fling, which has recently started on BBC Scotland and BBC Two. You may be familiar with Martin Compston from his acting roles in hit TV series such as Line of Duty and The Rig. And Phil McHugh is a TV personality and owner of Scapa PR, which is based in Edinburgh. A couple of years back, Martin and his good friend Phil set out to film a Scottish travelogue adventure, and its success has seen the second series commissioned. I chatted to Martin and Phil about their time in Norway, the interesting and even challenging food and drink they encountered, Martin's plans to produce a beer, and how what they encountered compares to their travels in Scotland. Both Martin and Phil share their tips for eating and drinking in Scotland, and I had to ask about their desert island jams. Okay, I'm joined by Martin Compston and Phil McHugh, and we're here to talk about Martin Compston's Norwegian Fling, which is out on the BBC this month. So hello both.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. Yeah, really good.
Yeah, promos were coming just to the end of our wee promo tour, but it's really nice when you're on something that you're proud of yourself and that you love being part of, but it's nice when you can feel that people who have seen it enjoyed it, you know. So it's actually really exciting this time, because when we did it the last time, we didn't know how people would take to it, we didn't know how it would turn out, but this time there seems to be a real anticipation about it, so it's exciting.
Yeah. So for anyone that doesn't know, how did you meet and how did the series come about?
So we met when we were in our late teens, here in Glasgow, actually. We were kind of both on the circuit of going out to a lot of events. You know, I was starting in television, he was in acting, and we were at a lot of the similar events in the city centre. And usually the last two at the bar. And that's really how we started, and sometimes how we end still. But that kind of set off our friendship, and over the years we've grown alongside each other, you know. And during COVID time, Martin was learning Gaelic, and I'm a fluent Gaelic speaker. So as well as having Duolingo, with his bad pronunciation, he would tap into me in WhatsApp to get the right pronunciation for some of these words. But it fascinated me when I said to him, oh, well, I've always wanted to make Gaelic a little bit more cooler. You know, I want to make it, I've always had that ambition that it should be, you know, seen by the masses, and, you know, it's not just a phase that's dying out or anything like that. And with this boy's, you know, profile as well, I thought, well, why don't we try and do something together? You're learning a language. I'd love to kind of make it a little bit more cool. Let's find out maybe if you've got any Gaelic heritage or any ties to there, to Hebrides. And then we had several conversations together before we went to production company, and they really took that initial idea from us, and it became what we now know as Scottish Fling. So it did become a little bit more adventurous, but that idea of, you know, exploring what culture is today and digging deep into various parts of our homeland, a country that we both are very proud of and love, you know, intently, actually. But ultimately, that show resonated so well with a lot of people, and we thought, well, let's go again. Mm-hmm. And we didn't really know where to go, but there was a few countries on each of our lists, and then actually Norway came out of the blue. It was one of these things that we thought, wow, we don't really know much about that country. We'd love to know more. There's similarities there between certain parts of Shetland and Orkney, and especially kind of the west coast of Norway and Bergen, especially in that kind of oil and gas industry. Fisheries, the forestry as well, is kind of the big industries that they have. So for us, it was like, yeah, let's get our teeth into this one. And that's why we packed our bags and off we went.
Well, that answers my second question, which is why Norway. Yeah. But so I've had a little preview of some of the episodes, and I really enjoyed it. But there was an episode when you were going out to buy booze, an off licence. It's quite different to here. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
I think the booze was government controlled, if I remember it right. Yeah, so you can only buy it from these certain markets. You can buy beer in most places, but to buy liquor, you have to buy it from government. So then it's all high priced and all the tax kind of stuff. So it was a bit. And it shuts really.
Yeah, it closes early, and it's only open certain days.
Yeah, and I think it was closed on Sundays, so it is a bit of a shock to us, you know, when you're kind of used to being able to buy whenever you want. But I mean, it's just their culture of it, yeah. You know. Yeah, yeah.
They don't have a huge drinking culture. Not tons.
It seems to be when the sun's out, they descend. And apparently, because they don't have a lot of sun, everybody literally just stops working.
Yeah.
And everybody seems fine with that. Like, nobody seems to get in trouble, because it was weird that one day in Oslo, but then when the sun came out, just the place was absolutely heaving. Yeah.
But you notice it as well when you land into some of the airports, like when we landed in Oslo, the duty free was packed full of locals stocking up because it was much cheaper.
Yeah.
And that is the big difference. It is costly to drink out there, you know, if you're buying alcohol in the stores or inside hotels and restaurants, you know, it does become more of a luxury to buy. Whereas, you know, it's not like that here. We get access to it all times. So, but it's a really interesting way of not even controlling it, just kind of allowing people access to it when they want. Or
because of it, I think we maybe medicate a bit with it to an extent, in terms of when you've got cold weather and darkness, you know, it's very easy for people that when they've got the extreme version of it, maybe it just regulates it a bit more, because you're up there and it's pitch darkness for months. It's probably easy just to kind of thing it, but they seem to have their heads screwed on with that stuff. They just get themselves bundled up and go skiing.
Which is healthier.
Exactly,
we were talking to people and say, like, when you see that amount of snow, and say, we have barbecues in the snow. Like, they go, they take a couple of beers and a load of meat and have a barbecue out in the forest in the snow. It's wild.
So there's things we could learn, maybe, but also
tons we can learn from them. I said they very wisely invested their oil fund. You know, their infrastructure is amazing in terms of the roads, their green energy. You know, they're really, really pushing that. It's electric cars everywhere.
Yeah,
I think they've got the highest electric car per person in the world.
There's a lot of Teslas kicking about.
Just cars, other cars are available. They with a lot of things, they just seem ahead of the game. Like silly things, which might seem really mundane, but you can 5G everywhere, and I mean literally at the top of a mountain or at the bottom of a tunnel, like tunnels are miles long.
Yeah.
But you had a full internet signal wherever you go, and it was free. They definitely seem, I don't know why we're so far behind them in certain aspects.
And even you know, the great outdoors there, they're more at one with it all. You know, they've all got a second home, a cabin in the north, or a cabin even 20 miles from the city centre. They all escape at the weekends, and they go to these spaces that are tranquil and beautiful and surrounded by forestry. And we don't really tend to do that as much here. You know, I think we're put off by the great outdoors, but actually on our doorstep here, we've got all that access, but we just don't use it as much. And they seem to grasp that and really enjoy it way more than what we do. So yeah, I'd love to kind of take that and give it to everybody in Scotland to say, you know, we've got the space, we've got the environment, let's just go and see it all a little bit more.
Yeah. Well, one of the things you did that we don't do here was eat a sheep's head. Which, as someone who doesn't even eat lamb, just the thought of was slightly giving me the boat. Can you tell us a story behind that, and how did it taste?
Look, it was not high on my list of priorities when I got there, but you got to embrace the culture. You know, it's something they do at Christmas, and when you hear the history behind it, it's because the farmer would sell the best parts of the sheep and keep the head for themselves, because that would sort of maximise their earnings. It is quite brutal.
Yeah.
It can be quite
the brutal. The process is quite brutal to watch.
But I mean, if you're going to eat meat, you've kind of got to make your peace with that kind of thing. And it's better that all of the animals getting used rather than any of it going to waste. But no, it's not appetising. It's really not. And fair play to Phil for having a go at the eye, but
that was the real delicacy of it all as well, wasn't it?
It wasn't the eye,
and I thought, we need to try it.
You got to try it. I mean, if you're going to be there, you've got to try it. So we get our back up when people slag haggis, you know, so you can understand that. But no, it's quite visually, it's quite striking.
But it wasn't too unpleasant to eat, if I'm honest. We both tried it. It was
just like ham.
Yeah.
Just tastes a bit.
Like a ham hock.
I think if you'd have got it off the plate like that, and you'd have fine, but when it's just there, poor thing.
Covered in ketchup or gravy, maybe.
Like staring in the head, like a, it's full on.
Yeah, I was going to say, because haggis doesn't look like what it is, whereas if it's this actual head.
Yeah. If you just turn it with a stick, it was quite a surreal one we just
watched. But something very authentic or organic about it as well, the process, you know. Actually, the lady that was showing us around that farm, she was so proud of it, because it was the only place in that region that produced these, and people do buy it for their celebratory times around Christmas. So it is something that they're still proud of, which is amazing to see.
I'm assuming that probably wasn't one of your favourite things to eat when you were there. Did you find a sort of favourite food or drink or something quite unusual that you liked?
I don't think we found a favourite thing to eat, but what I did love was the day that we spent in Credo, mm-hmm. the restaurant. So there's a very famous female Michelin star chef, and she was the first ever restaurateur to win a green Michelin star award. And we had the day with her and her team, and her team were all very young, all highly enthusiastic mm-hmm. about their kind of roles and jobs. And the best thing, not even just about the food that we tried that day with her, but actually it was the family feast that she created for the entire workspace and all the employees. It was a real kind of, and not just like a quick fix meal. This was, you know, a really wholesome, hearty meal. They all sat down at a big table that was upstairs in the kitchen, all gathered, had conversations together, spoke about life, work life, personal life, and take that hour away from the kitchen to actually enjoy some good food. And that was brilliant that day, wasn't it?
I think that was, I mean, it wasn't my finest moment, but the fishing day, because I fell to pieces that day. We were celebrating National Day the day before and turned into a bit of a late one. So being up in a fishing trawler with seeing these fish getting pulled out of the sea and gutted just didn't quite sit quite well for me. So luckily Phil took, but back from hanging over the side of the boat and we got back to this lovely island, the fisherman's family, they had their own little restaurant on this little island, and it was the freshest fish and chips you're ever going to have in your life. It was like, they caught it, they gutted it, and then they deep fried it, and it was delicious, the actual
And the fish. Whole family involved.
Everybody involved.
The kids are out fishing with them and, you know, helping plate up. That was really special.
That was amazing.
So from food to drink now, Martin, you met some whales and had a great time, although it looked a bit nerve-wracking. But in the past you've mentioned you'd like to bring out your own whiskey and call it Wolf's Head.
We've got the podcast, we kind of had an idea of our podcast ideas as the clown and the wolf man, and I wanted a whiskey I wanted a striking bottle, because everybody says that's, if you're going to try something new, what makes you try something new, it's the bottle. But I think I'm settling on the beer now. I think I want to bring out my own beer. That's what I want to do.
And is either of those likely, do you think?
I think the beer is very likely. I think we're very lucky. I've got a pal in LA who owns a brewery, so I've been working with him, so I think at some point later in the year, hopefully you're drinking Restless Natives beer, but who knows?
I'm going to bring up my own Pina Colada brand.
I mean, that's been done before, so why not?
Well, you know, well, there's a market, there's a space.
Also on Scam, I'd like to ask our guests about their desert island jams. So it doesn't have to be whiskey, but I think you are a whiskey fan.
Yeah, I do love a Glenrothes. I wouldn't say I'm a whiskey expert by any means, but I got into, especially when I'm at home, I don't like, maybe it's just getting older and being dad and stuff, I don't like drinking at home in the house. But actually there's something different about having just a dram, because you're not necking glasses of wine and or beer and making you feel rough and that, but just a nice whiskey, I'm probably a fan of Glenrothes. Have a nice Glenrothes with a wee bit of ice and just have one of them to watch a nice TV before you knock out for the night.
That sounds good. Right now that sounds great. I'll have whatever you're having.
What other two drinks would you take away with you? It doesn't have to be whiskey.
I love a Malbec. I do love a Malbec, but there's a wine brand which is, they don't sell over here, and I'll hopefully come soon because it's very reasonably priced. It's called Josh. It's a California wine, and they've got this Cab Sav. And unfortunately, me and my wife collect the corks, and now when you see the amount, we're like, all right, that's maybe a bit much. It's only like, I think it's like $15, which is about £12 for a bottle of this stuff, and it's gorgeous. But it's not for sale over here yet. I'm like, I hope somebody brings it soon. An Iron Brew.
Iron Brew. Classic.
I'm not a huge whiskey fan, but I love gin. And for me, there's still only one since they've come out, was the Isle of Harris gin. I love it. I think it's brilliant. So big fan. Managed to go to the distillery as well and experience it up there. And they just seem to be doing phenomenal right now globally. And they've got a great bottle, as you just said.
Yeah.
Every brand that works has got a nice bottle.
You need a bottle.
Stick a candle in it at the end, you're getting two for one. It's brilliant. and another two. I mean, I don't know if you know Rosalind, but I was recently on Saturday Kitchen. And my great friend Helen, who's a brilliant wine expert, she actually opened a bottle of Cremant, but I'm a huge fan of Cremant because it's a much more cheaper version of champagne, but you still got all the
things.
It's
nice, that, though.
Yeah, it's really nice. Yeah. I think you can get it for 10 quid in the supermarkets now, and you're still paying 30, 40 quid for a bottle of champagne. Mm. So Cremant for me, and sparkling water. I mean, I just love
Santa Laguna. I cannot drink sparkling water.
I love it.
The best description, I read someone describing it, it tastes like TV static.
That's
I think that's exactly how it is. It makes me thirstier when I drink it.
Really?
It's, yeah, because it's fizzy but with no taste. It's
weird.
I find it's a very good hangover cure as well.
Really?
Oh yeah, it's one of the best.
So just another quick travel question for you, Martin. Are there Scottish food and drinks that you miss or take with you when you go back to America?
I would call it slice, but for thinking square sausage, I you can't, just the dimensions of that for a roll. You know, it's, I had it this morning actually, and it's the first time I've had it in ages. It is just so good. Like,
what do you have on it?
Not just butter.
No,
I just like
no
a bit
ketchup,
like a
no
thick,
not
just
butter.
I'd like it just a buttered roll and a nice bit of slice. Like, I get, it's just a perfect, I see the way it just, I think it's my, anything I would take, if I could take it anywhere, would be that. And it's a weird thing to say, but like, I don't think many people do like a West Coast Chinese curry. Like a beef curry and chips out of Chinese here. Like even if I go across to Edinburgh and stuff, it doesn't taste the same. And that would probably be my death row meal. The salt and chili chicken wings and beef curry and chips. The only other place it kind of does it similar is, seems to be Belfast. I mean, we're West Coast, we're right there. But yeah, there's a West Coast beef curry. Yeah, that would probably be my, like I've not had one in months now, and I've got one on Friday night when I'm going to sit down with my folks and watch Norwegian Fling,
yes,
which is out on across iPlayer, and I can't wait for that.
Yeah. Sounds good. Also, this takes me on to my next question. I was going to say East versus West in terms of food, but what I'm going to say is, Phil, tell me your favourite places to eat and drink in Scotland.
In Edinburgh, I mean, I live in Edinburgh, so for me it's got a much better variety of restaurant choices because you've got so many independents as well as the kind of big brands. But I love a Sunday roast at Hawksmoor. I think it's brilliant. And Sunday's a day that you can switch off, or I try to switch off just from everything in life. And having a few hours there is just magical. Good bottle of red and a nice Sunday roast. It's, you can't beat it. I'm a huge fan of Tom Kitchen's restaurant in Edinburgh as well. The Kitchen, it's brilliant. It's, you know, been there for decades now, and he seems to kind of still pull it out of the bag when it comes to good food. It's a bit pricey at times, but you don't go there all the time. You go there occasionally. And I'm a big fan of Jimmy Lee as well, you know.
Oh, Jimmy.
Yeah, we both love Jimmy's food, you know. I know you're a massive Cantonese Chinese fan.
I'm massive in that,
Jimmy. I love his salt and chili brand as well. It's
and
great
Phil's
food.
Phil's got me into all these places. I mean, for me, it would be... Is it Chateau X?
Yeah,
just
Chateau
up in
X,
Finiston.
Yeah, you love that.
Great steak. Duck and waffle, which for me, I was like, he took me in. I'm like, it's a waffle with duck and an egg and soy sauce. I was like, this sounds horrendous, and it is delicious.
Yeah.
Like, it's the first place when I say to people, go try it, but make sure you try it, because
the combination, you're like, what? You know, but actually, it works.
The first place I always go is Jimmy's Salt and Chili.
Yeah.
His Salt and Chili place is just sensational.
It's brilliant food.
I'm determined to get one open in Greenock at some point. Just but yeah, that's Phil's turned me on to all those places.
Yeah, and in the West Coast, I mean, there's a lot happening now in Glasgow. Mm-hmm. It's brilliant, you know. For years, Edinburgh was always way ahead with the food and drink scene, but Glasgow seems to have really picked up in the last kind of year or so, specifically. Hazel, which is amazing in Glasgow, I think it's a brilliant restaurant. And the Merchant City as a whole just seems to be taking a new lease of life. So yeah, there's some really exciting developments out there. And one of the places that we like to go in Edinburgh is Nightcap. We love that. Great, great cocktail
right now,
bar.
What's that on?
It's on Queen Street.
Street, so you just come at the back of St Andrew's
brilliant
Square.
Place.
But I was a stool in that place. Like, yeah. I tend to stay in... and St Andrew's Square, and when I'm there, I love the Grand. And if you can get the Glen Eagles townhouse roof, if you can get in there,
yeah, it's
even
brilliant
up there. If you're up there on that roof in the summer with a glass of rosé, is sensational. But
I'm not a big margarita guy, but the best margarita I've ever had in my life is in Nightcap, which is just around the corner.
Tiny wee bar as
well. It's like a speakeasy, but and they only let in.
It's about 20
the capacity. It's always, but they only let in people in terms of they could pack that out, but they only let people in at the tables. They don't let people just stand at the bar, so it just feels like you just feel you've got space to sit and catch up and quiet.
And it still feels like a wee bit of a hidden gem as well.
100%. So Nightcap for sure, that would be highly recommended.
Well, it's National Margarita Day on Thursday, so...
Oh, there we go.
There you go, you place. Any excuse. So we talked a little bit about how the Scotland leg of this came about. How did this trip compare to Scotland?
It felt more epic at the time, and it feels more epic now, even looking back. It just felt that we had a little bit more time ourselves to have conversations, you know, lots of travelling, hours and days of kind of being in the car together. So we kind of got to spend a little bit more time with each other. Yeah, you've got production companies there that are filming it, but actually that time's also valuable because they've become part of a family for that show. And the same team worked on season one as they did season two. And then in terms of kind of like the adventures that we got up to, I definitely, for me personally, pushed the limits on my adventure part, you know, by trying to jump into anything and jump off everything. You know, we kick off the show with a zip line, and we're then ending up being in the kind of North Sea cold waters and the oil rig training. So beforehand, I would have been like, oh no, I don't want to do that. This time I was like, you know, I'm okay. Let's go for it. Let's try it.
No, it definitely felt just literally it was more of an adventure holiday, because when we were filming here, one of the great things about it is that we were at home. So if we were on the East Coast, Phil was going back to Edinburgh, he's going back to his house, and we did a lot on the West Coast, so I was going back. I mean, I actually wanted to start it. Like, I live, my place is right on the river in Greenock, and I was trying to see if there's any way he could pull up a boat to the front of the, front of the house so we could just start it right there. So it's like...
Find you a boat, though, in season one.
Yeah, you did find... Well, if you would call that a boat. But yeah, but we were literally just... I was going home after a couple of nights, so you weren't on the road as much. You know, you'd do 2-3 days... Then we'd have a day or two off at home, whereas with this, we were just on the road all the time. Yeah. And we had a lovely day where we stopped in this place, and there's a whole crew. There's a bit of core of about 10 of us who've all been together. And we just, on our day off, all went to the beach together. Like, it wasn't like everybody's going, right, we just done 6 days filming. Yeah. It wasn't like, oh, we're sick of each other. It was like, right, let's all meet here at 12 o'clock tomorrow. And we had a barbecue and went swimming and... out in one of the fjords, which was a bit nippy.
Did you get in?
I did, we had the saunas and then the fjords. It was brilliant.
Yeah, that was lovely. It was like a wee guy just built a sauna on the beach. It was just like a wee hut. It was mental, but it was roasting, wasn't it?
It was. It was brilliant that day. And I think that's part of you know, the series works so well because we've got a brilliant team behind that as well. You know, everyone from the cameraman to the soundman, they're fully part
brilliant.
Of it, and that helps us. It puts us at ease to do things, to meet people, to be a little bit more open, and that makes it all special for us making it. Not so sure if it's the special thing that they see on camera, but for us to kind of get the best out of it, it's useful to have an incredible team.
What's next for 2024 and this year and any future
well
projects?
my pina colada brand will be out this year.
Christmas.
Who knows? I mean, listen, I'm just so thankful and lucky to have Martin by my side on both these seasons. I thought season one was a dream, and then I get a season two, and it's kind of, it feels bigger, more powerful, it feels better. There's a huge energy around what we've just been doing over the last kind of week on an advance of the show coming on air. So that's exciting. That kind of makes me kind of want to do a little bit more in this field. But, you know, who knows? I mean, that's the beauty of it. This is just, it's almost like a holiday with your pal for 2 months of the year. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's plenty. I'd be happy if I had that for all my life. So, yeah.
Yeah, you could start filming your job in Glasgow and... 2 weeks, so it'll be taking a couple of months, and then big 4-0 in May, which is quite terrifying. And then for all of us, Scotland and Germany, I cannot wait. Yeah, that's like it's kind of timed quite well that for me, and that like the last time we qualified for, I mean, obviously like the boys did amazing to get to the last one, but it was during COVID. The stadiums were half empty. It felt weird having a Euros in Scotland to an extent, if it was all here, but it didn't feel quite right. This is the first time we've qualified for Euros since I was 12, and I'm 40 next year, and the next one, so it was nice to say it, to be able to say it to the missus, because we would easily say, like, I'm disappearing for 3 weeks in Germany on to watch Scotland, but I think I'm getting away with it because of my birthday.
So that's how you're going to celebrate your birthday?
Yeah, that's my birthday. I'm going to Germany to see the boys.
Well, let's hope we do well then.
I hope so, but just even to be there, it's just to experience it. I never, honestly, you start to lose hope after a while, just going like, is it ever going to happen? And the way the tournaments are going now, it's all this spread over countries thing, whereas the old way, like, I grew up watching, it was always in one country, and what I loved about it is all the different nations descending on that, and you're going to bump into different cultures and all that kind of stuff. That's what I'm excited about. In Scotland, on the opening night against Germany in Munich, there's probably be a half a billion people watching this game. Yeah. And the fact we're involved in it, and to be there, and like, everybody I know is going to go out for it, you know, so I can't wait for it. I mean, I hope we do well, but it's more just the experience of it.
Should be good. I'm not going, my boyfriend's going, so I'm jealous. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm really looking forward to seeing the full series and see where you end up next.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Martin Comston's Norwegian Fling is available on BBC iPlayer now. Thanks to Martin and Phil for being my guests on this episode, and thanks to you two for listening. Please remember to rate, review and subscribe so you never miss an episode of Scran. Scran is a Laudable podcast that's co-produced and hosted by me, Ross and Derskine, and co-produced, edited and mixed by Kelly Crichton.